It says by Matan Torah, V'chova Amroim Es HaKolos. The people could see the voices of what the Rebbe had spoke to Kaisha. So Rashi says that they were able to see the sounds. Normally you can't see sounds, you can only hear sounds. So the Bunch made a nace that in this case they were able to actually see the sounds. Well, why should the Bunch make a nace like that? What use is that? I mean, the Bunch doesn't make a nace for no reason. There must have been a reason why the Baruch Hashem said that it made this nice that you should be able to see the sounds. So I think the Kotzka says the following. It says in the Aseres Adibris, Loi Signoif. Actually means it's about kidnapping. As Rav Sadia Gaon says, that all the whole Torah is Merubas Naseres Hadibris. So the Issa of Gneiva is also Merubas and Loisignaiva. What does that mean, Loisignaiva? Does it mean that you should not steal? Or does it mean for the Rebbeinu Shel Olam you're allowed to steal? If you have a yeshiva and they don't, there's not enough money, you can steal money from the government. It's not so clear. Because it depends how you spell it. Do you spell loy with a vav? And then loy signa means for the Rebbeinu Shel Olam you're allowed to steal. Loy sinof, you're not allowed to be in illicit relationships, but for the Rebbeinu Shel Olam you're allowed to do that. Or that for the Rebbeinu Shel Olam you're allowed to tell lies and you're allowed to do whatever you want. What does it mean you're not supposed to do it? How can you tell by listening? You can't tell by listening. You have to see it. You have to see that the lie was written with an alf, not with a vav. So that's why the Rebbeinu Shel Olam made this nes, so it should be clear exactly what the Rebbeinu Shel Olam was saying over here. That you're not allowed to steal. Not from the Baruch Hashem you can steal. So, that's the point. The point is that Torah has to be, when you learn Torah, it's a tremendous mitzvah what you're doing to spend time learning Torah, whether it's your free time, whether it's all your time. So it's a tremendous mitzvah. Torah is one of the biggest mitzvahs. Chofetz Chaim says an interesting thing, that if you say that a person learns 4 hours a day, sometimes it could be lashon hara, and sometimes it's considered a tremendous praise. So if the person is in kol the whole day, and he learns 4 hours an hour, you're saying that most of the time he battles and doesn't learn. If someone's above a bus, and he works during the day, and he comes at night and learns for 4 hours, it's a tremendous praise. So you have to take everything, you have to understand everything exactly what's being said over here. And sometimes things which Chazal, especially when we talk about Chazal, I believe they're very often misrepresented, because people don't understand exactly what Chazal are saying. The words of Chazal, they said it in a very short form. And not always is it possible to understand what they're saying unless you really think into it. Now I'm going to give you an example, but this is just one example. Chazal say, Asidim Botanesius or Botamidrashis Shababavel Lias Beretz Yisrael. That in the future, when the Mashiach comes, all the shuls and the places where you learn Botamidrashis Shababavel, which are on Chutz La'aretz, are they going to be in Eretz Yisrael? So therefore, if you're planning to make a new building, don't worry that maybe the Mashiach is going to come tomorrow, and then all the money you put into the building is going to get wasted. No, the Beis Medrash is going to be brought over to Eretz Yisrael, so you don't have to worry about that. Now, it's my thinking that that's not the Pshat in the Chazal. I may be wrong, but I might be right. And the Pshat is like this. I think that this is one of the things which says the Gemara, which we actually see with our own eyes that it's happening. Where is the Mir Yeshiva? Is it in Poland? Or is it in Eretz Yisrael? Where's the Slabodka Yeshiva? Is it in Lithuania? Or is it in Eretz Yisrael? Where is the Bells Beis Medrash? Is it in Romania? Or is it in Eretz Yisrael? Where's the Gera Beis Medrash? Is it in Poland? Or is it in Eretz Yisrael? Chazal didn't mean that the bill is going to fly over. The Chazal said that every Mokum Torah and Mokum Avodah, Tefillah, and Tefillah and Torah is going to be replanted in Eretz Yisrael. Those are people who learn over here in a yeshiva. The yeshiva will be transplanted, not necessarily the same building. So you see, all the yeshivas, even Lakewood has a branch in Eretz Yisrael of it. And the Bata Midrashim from all the famous Bata Midrashim that were in Europe are also being transplanted in Eretz Yisrael. That's what Chazal means. So you have to be very careful when you deal with Chazal, how to understand them. Some of them are really not so understandable. I remember when I was in the Yeshiva in Torah Das, my Rebbe in the third grade high school was Rav Pam, so it was out of the Brach. So we learned a Gemara. The Gemara says, the Bar Barash in the first parrot, the Gemara says that when the sun comes up in the east, like it says in the Pasuk, when Mizrach Shem Shalvavah, it comes up in the Mizrach, and it sets in the west, it goes to the south, in the northern hemisphere, in the southern hemisphere it goes to the north, and it sets in the west, and at night it goes through a pipe under the ground and comes up, through a tunnel under the ground and comes back up in the east. So one of the Bachram said, Rebbe, we know that that's not true. The sun doesn't go under the earth. The sun, we go around the earth, and that's why we don't see it at night. So this was Rav Pam's answer. He said, if someone were to ask you, what is the shortest route between two points, what would you say? So the Bacha said, a straight line. Said yes. Well, what happens if someone would say that the shortest distance between two points is a curve? What would you say? I would say he doesn't know what he's talking about. I said, well, what happens if someone would tell you that Albert Einstein says that the shortest distance between two points is a curve? You would say, look, Albert Einstein said it. I mean, I don't understand it, but there must be something to it. Because he was known to be the biggest scientist in the world and mathematician. So Rav Pam said, look, if Albert Einstein does say that the shortest point between two points is a curve of the universe, he says that. So he says, if Albert Einstein says something, you say, I don't understand it, but if he said it, there must be something to it. So if Chazal said something, so then you should say that I don't understand it, but if Chazal said it, there must be something to it. Okay, so this is a very important thing. That Chazal were very smart people. They're very smart. And not only that, but they had Ruach HaKadosh. And they knew things that There's no way that we can even fathom to understand. So, and they said it. It is, it should make an impression on our mind, whether we understand it, we don't understand it. Maybe one day we'll understand it. If every base measure is going to be in Eretz Yisrael, how's it work? It goes, you can't even pick up the base measure in Yerushalayim, right? It's famous. All the tourists go and take them to this go and see this base measure because it costs $40 million to build. It's modeled after the Bell's base measure which they had in Romania. That's how they made it. So it's not the pshat the Baruch is going to pick up the. It's not the pshat to pick up the building and send it over. So he doesn't have to. They already built another one. So why is he going to build the other one? Who knows what's doing with the other one? So we have to understand what Chazal. Sometimes we will understand it. Sometimes we will never understand it. Sometimes it's not possible with our limited intelligence to understand it. Just like a dog, you can teach a dog to stand on its hind feet, maybe to catch a ball in its mouth. But if you try to teach him algebra or just arithmetic, he can't understand it. Why? Because his brain is not wired in a way that can understand math. It's not because he will say, math, doesn't make any sense. So the dog would say it. So, of course, it doesn't make any sense to him because he can't understand it. So Chazal have said things which we can't understand, but because our brain is not programmed in such a way that we could understand it. And when Moshe Rabbeinu asked the Rabbanu Shel Olam, Haredi Nos Koy Decha, show me who you are, what you're covered, the Rabbanu Shel Olam said, Ani Od V'Chay, a live person cannot understand what I am. Our brains are not made to understand it, so we can't understand it. Think as much as we can't understand it. And in Ruchnius in general, what this is not easy to understand, because we're so far away from it, living in this Gashmius, materialistic world, that there's certain things we can't understand. So when it says, and they say, where is the makam? I am makam kveda. Where is the place? What does that mean? Mim kaimai. Something which is materialistic has a place. But the Ribbono Shel Olam is complete. What kind of place? For instance, like a thought. You know there's such a thing as short thought waves. People on one side of the ocean can think something, and people on the other side of the ocean can pick it up. Where is this thought? Where is it? Where is it? It's all over. Wherever someone wants to pick it up, it's available. I mean, they've done this. It's not, we've done with experiments. So people can pick up other people's thought waves. So, what does it mean, I am a conqueror? Where is it? So the God says, whenever someone speaks about the makam of the Ribbono Shel Olam, it is not referring to a place the way we think. Mekayim means it's makam in the madrega of ruchnius. How high? You know, there are levels in ruchnius, one above the other. How high is it? That's what they're talking about. I am a conqueror. The God says, when some makam refers to the madrega. Okay, the bottom line of what I'm saying is, it's not always so easy to understand what Chazal have said. And that doesn't mean to say, just because we don't understand it, or because it sounds strange to us, or it sounds ridiculous to us, that it doesn't mean anything. Even Chazal talk about things which are which have to do with facts. No, the world is round. It says in the first in the pasuk, "Hayoshev al chug haaretz." Chug means the circle of the world. was Nishai. But even though at that time everyone thought that the world was flat, but Chazal said in the Zohar says that when over one side of the world is light, the other side of the world is it's dark. So they knew about all these things. How did they know that? They went to America and decided to for it. They were not America at that time, so they knew Baruch HaKadosh. A lot of things Chazal knew Baruch HaKadosh. So the things that we understand also knew Baruch HaKadosh, and we should take it very seriously. And we got the Posh HaPshat, but whatever they said is meaningful. That's the end of my drasha. Okay, do you have any questions anyone wants to ask me?
Could the Rav give us a rough gather for how in matters of tznius, how the minhag ha'makom influences certain aspects of dress?
Okay, so there are certain minimum regulations about tznius. But then there's an aspect of tznius which has to do with hirur, where people shouldn't think about women. So you know about hirur of women, right?
Yeah.
So the Rashi, the Mishnah Berurah says that by hair is different, a hair of a woman that's married, so she's mechuyev to cover her hair. So even though if the parts of the body which is supposed to be covered are uncovered, you have to turn around when you want to say Kriya Shema or learn. But by hair, it's good enough not to look at it. Because hair is only a erva because it's Gerim Hir. So you don't look at it, it's no Hir. So in other words, even though we learned all from the Psukim and Sharashirim, Sarakeda Ism, that we see that Alma Taibahu, so Rashi says in the Gemara, so the whatever is going on a Taiba for a person is considered an Erva. So in places where they don't cover it, so since we're used to it, so then it's not going many here. Akadei Kach, that the Aruch HaShulchan says you're allowed to daven in front of the hair because we're used to it. And what difference is it? A woman's not married, so you're allowed to daven because we're used to it, because they're not allowed to cover the hair. So a married woman is, if they don't do it, so it's mutter. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that. Most of the Achraim don't say it. I'm not so sure that it applies anymore today because most of the from women do cover their hair. But, I mean, Aruch HaShulchan says they're mechuyev to cover their hair. He's not saying that mechuyev to cover their hair, but since they don't do it, so there's no hirur. Like the says in Shulchan Aruch that you don't say Sheva Brachas someone got married, so if you make a suit of a cover the Chosna Kala, so you say Sheva Brachas at the Suda, by the bench. So the Beis Shmuel says that if there's men and women in the same room, you don't say Sheva Brachas because the Shekhinah is not Shaira B'makom where the Yetzer Hara is, and if there are men and women together, you can't do it. It's the Simcha, there's no Simcha of Ma'inai. There's no Silk of Ma'ina where the Yetzer Hara is Shaila. But some of the other Achraim say that that's all the times when they were separate. But today, that we have them, the Minigas have them together, so there is no Hira anymore. So therefore, it's Mutter, and that's how the Minig. So we don't chase them out of the room. Not only that, but my Rosh Hashiva, Rabban Kotler, second son of Bracha, was Makpit when they had a Sheva Brachas. One of the Bachman got married in Lakewood, which happens every now and then. No, but when I came to the Yeshiva, there was only 58 Bachman in the whole Yeshiva. That was in 1954. And so it happened like every half year or whatever. So I had Shabbat Brachos in the yeshiva. They don't do it anymore, but otherwise you have to have Shabbat Brachos every night and every during the day, and you never learn anything. Anyway, so there was separate room for the men and the women, but he was makbid that the kala has to come in when they're benching, because otherwise he held was a bracha vatala. He says you can't make shav brachas for a chazna kala, not for the chazna, or sorry, not for the kala, if they're not there. He was makbid that the kala should come in and the sat at the head table with the where one, because he held that was makbid the bracha. What was your question?
So let's say the chatchila.
Okay, so therefore, let's say the minig is for women to go with their sleeves all the way down to the wrist. They only mechuyev to go to the elbow, but they go to the wrist. So then, if it's uncovered from the wrist to the elbow, it's going to mirror, because they're not used to seeing that, and therefore it becomes an error in itself. But there again, since it's only not be'etzem an erva, it's only an erva because it's the normal to cover it. If you don't look at it, it would be allowed to die.
Which women do we go by to be there when you say you're used to it?
Because
the guy, you know,
I would dress and all. I would say you go by the frum women. Frum women.
Like Shomer Shabbos or
Shomer Shabbos.
And if it's Yesh V'Yesh? Some do, some don't.
Then there's no minhag.
And then there's no reason for it?
Then they don't have to be machme in the skumra that some of them do. Whatever is the halacha that you have to do, that they till the elbow, it doesn't help if the most of them go with sleeveless dresses. It doesn't help, because that's an error which will land off in the pasuk. But if it's only because they are noikir machme, then it's only error because of hirur.
Is there any reason for that chumrah?
Because of hirur. That's the reason.
You go by roif, or
it's not clear. It's not clear. I mean, it's not if there's one woman who doesn't do it, it doesn't count. I'm not sure if it's roif. Or you need a rub de minka, which is 70%.
Which is what?
70%.
17?
70.
70.
How does one determine sakana on Shabbos? Like, such as, if there was a shooting in some city, does that justify all security measures in every other city in the country?
Like
in terms of carrying a gun on Shabbos, or on those sort of halachos.
Okay, so b'dei klal, you assume that it's a sakana, if it is a sakana. Okay, so are people afraid to go? I mean, it's usually, just because if you go into a shul in Pakistan, you know, there's a sakana. It doesn't mean to say it's a sakana in Atlanta or Norfolk. So the I think it's a little bit overdone, some of this sakana business. I mean, if people feel comfortable, like over here we had all these riots with the shvatas that burnt down. So you think to yourself that which stupid person would ever live in Baltimore? This is a town which is all kinds of rotskum over here. Nothing happens. You know, we don't have anyone with guns over here to protect the people who come to the shul. We didn't have that. And Baruch Hashem, the Baruch Hashem helped us. We I assume it's Leyeda Davara. If someone is Shem Mitzvah Leyeda Davara, so we're not worried. It all depends if there is a sakana, no sakana. So that place where the problem was. It's a few blocks down, you know, so we're not worried about over here. But that we have, there's a kosher slaughterhouse right a half a block away from where these riots were. So and there's a lot of workers over there who are also
carry knives.
It's a slaughterhouse. Yeah. So, I mean, they went and they set fire to 180 cars, and they blew up they burned down a pharmacy which they already built up already, and it's back in business. You can see it's down here, not that far away. So they didn't come to work for a couple of days. The shanters worked there. Didn't come to work for a couple of days until everything quieted down. So evidently they thought it was that kind of thing. Yeah, we walk around the street and we, Baruch Shem Nevarshem helps us. And I don't think that there were too many people over here who felt those things are coming.
But just to add to that question, but what happens if, in Norfolk, Baruch Hashem, I don't think we think this is a kana either. What happens if there's, you know, the government gets reports that there are terrorists that are trying to do stuff to fools or JCCs and things?
Oh,
we might not know there's a thing, but if we hear reports something might be happening, no, we won't
want to tell you something.
Also. But that changes.
I want to tell you something about government reports. In America, everyone is worried about themselves. So when they had the 9/11, they had tremendous tinnitus on the government. How come you didn't say anything before? So therefore, they always say that there's a problem, because in case there's a problem, they say, well, we warned you. Okay, so discard all those things. I mean, nothing ever happened, so then you don't have to worry about it.
Rav, another question. So as people grow in Yiddishkeit, obviously you have a Rav to go to for Vasar B'Chalav Shailas, and life becomes complicated with various situations. What is the value of a family having a Rav or a Rebbe beyond the Vasar B'Chalav Shailas? What is the value versus the danger on the other side of making those grayer decisions with that one?
Okay. So, Vasar B'Chalav Shailas are practical shailas that you have to know what to do. There's some questions about how a person, which are more important, or I should say, they have a bigger impact on the person's life and the life of his children and grandchildren than a question about Vasar B'Chalav. And let's say a simple question: someone he a nurse works in a hospital. So there may be questions about yichud over there, which is a bus of a chalav shayla basically. But then there are questions about the doctors tell them pull a plug, okay. So, because this patient doesn't want to live, and they don't want to live in their living will, and the family doesn't want to live. Okay, so that's also a Basar B'Chalav question. All right? Because it's a question, are you allowed to do it? You're not allowed to do it. But what's not a Basar B'Chalav question, at least in the mind of people, is, should I become a nurse? Could I become a doctor where I may have to work on a Shabbos? And should I move to a different town where I have a better job, but my chances of being elochid over there, the chinuch is very weak over there, and they have a chinuch, but it's not as good as in the town where I am. They have a people over there, but the people are more American over here in where you are. They're more Taridic. So these are very important questions, and they can shape the future of this person himself, his wife, who he may marry, who his children will marry, what the children are going to turn out like. So that is more of a hashkafa question, and question of what to do. So I want to tell you what answer Rav Pam once told. Someone asked this question to Rav Pam. He says, I have panasa over here in my town, but it is bedochik. I mean, I can make ends meet, but it's not I have to struggle, but I can make ends meet. But I was offered a job in another town where the Yiddishkeit is not so strong. They have an Orthodox shul, and they have an Orthodox rav, but in general, the Yiddishkeit is not so strong. The day school is not so good like in my town. Should I take the job or not? Okay, now many people won't ask this question. You know, here's a chance that they could live much easier, so they're not going to ask any questions. So Pam told me like this. It says, on Sukkos, we say, on Hashem Hoshion, and how? On Hashem Hoshiona, on Hashem Hoshiona, on Hashem Hasichona, on Hashem Hasichona. There's a Hashina means help. Hasichna means give us haslach. There's a very big difference between the Hashina and the Hasichna. Because by the Hashina, we take the lulav and we shake it in all six directions. To the east, the south, the west, the north, the up and down. By Hashina. But we don't do it by Hasichna. He says, why? He says, if a person, he says, I need help. I have no panasa. So then the Chazal say, man the bishleib haimasa, someone who is not going good for him in this city, yeh masa akrita, he should go to another town. Maybe it would be better for him over there. So then you go to the east, to the west, to the south, the north, up, down. You got to go somewhere else. If you ask him for hatzlacha, Hatzlacha means I can make it, but I would have more hatzlacha somewhere else. You stay where you are. You don't move. Because if Rasha wants to give you hatzlacha, he can give you hatzlacha here too. So evidently, if you go to the Rasha has written up from between Rosh Hashanah and Kippur how much you're going to get this year, and you're going to get the same amount wherever you go, so the hatzlacha you can ask for. That's a very interesting thing from Rosh Hashanah Schwab. He says, Chazal say, Kol mezoinosav shel adam ketzuv lo'i merosh Hashanah v'ad Yom HaKippurim. All the parnasa a person is going to have during the year is already decided between Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. Chutz mish hutzos shabbosos v'yam tovim or hutzos b'ano l'talmud Torah. Except what you spend for Shabbos and Yantav and what you spend for your children to learn Torah. So, first of all, I want to tell you, it's not the parsha of Pshat. So you have to understand what Chazal are talking about. There's two questions on it. So the Dubna Magid, he explains this Chazal with a mashal. He said there was a person who was a big gvir, he was very rich, and he had a daughter and two sons. The daughter was a kalah, was getting married. And he was going to make a fancy wedding, which is becoming to the person like his stature. He was a rich man. And he told his, and he had a son and two sons who lived in a different town. So he sent a message to his rich son that I want you to come to this wedding, you and your brother, and I want you to dress accordingly and come accordingly in a way that's befitting my honor, and whatever you spend for my honor I will reimburse you for whatever expenses you have, and tell your brother the same thing. Okay, so he was the rich brother, the other one was poor. So the rich brother went to the tailor and got himself a new outfit. His wife went and got herself made a new dress. And all the children that they brought with them, all fancy clothing. And they hired a wagon drawn by four white stallions that to take them to the chasna. And then on the day of the chasna, he realized he forgot to tell his brother. So he said to the brother, you know, our sister's getting married today. If you want, you can come along with me in my wagon. So he said, okay. I mean, he couldn't prepare anything because it was too late. So then he came to the wedding, and this fancy carriage pulls up, and the people are saying, psst, psst, this must be some rich person, some chashuva person. He comes out with his fancy suit and his top hat and everything else like that. So the people there observed, said he must be a real fancy person. And then his wife comes out, and the children come out. And then the poor brother comes out with his patches and his suit, and he looked like a beggar. So he said, what's going on? Okay, so they had the wedding, and at the end of the wedding, the rich son comes up to the father and says, the price is $50,000. That's what I spent. So the father said, I'm not paying. He said, but you promised me that whatever I spend for your honor, you're going to reimburse me. He said, yes, I said that, but I only said for what you spent for my honor, but you didn't care about my honor, because otherwise you would have cared about your brother, that he should also come with a fancy suit. You only care about your own honor. For your own honor, I am not mukhi to pay. So Dovin Rambam says the same thing with the Shabbos and Yontem. So you went and you ate a fancy cholent on Shabbos. Why do you do that? Because you like cholent, or you did it because of Shabbos. You got yourself a fancy suit for Shabbos. You did it because of honor of Shabbos, or you did it for your own honor. That's what it depends on. If you do it for the honor of Shabbos, that is, you get reimbursed for it. That's not included. You do it for your own honor, it's not included. So that's the first thing. But the Rav Sharp says something else. He says, we daven Baruch Aleinu Hashem Elokeinu Hashanah Zayis, bless this year for us, bless Kominei Sos L'Toivo, Saint Talamot L'Bracha Pnei Adama, Saint Bracha Pnei Adama, V'Sabein Tavacha, Avresh Naseinu. This is the Bracha of Parnasa, Chazal say. Well, already everything been decided between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, what are we doubting for? He says, beautiful thing. He says, when Chazal say, Chutz Me'atzos Shabbos Yom Tovim, it doesn't mean that you get reimbursed for Shabbos and Yom Tov. It means that if you spend money for Shabbos and Yom Tov, and you spend money for the chinuch of your children in Torah, then this cheshbon, you can get much more. Not just what you gave, not what you just spent. He says, if you spend money for Shabbos and Yom Tov, you can get a lot more. So the amount of parnasa is unlimited. Now, what was the question I was answering? I got off the tangent. What was your question?
Having a rav for hashkafa shalom.
Yes, having a rav for hashkafa shalom. So like, this is a different interpretation of the same chazal. You know, so you can't automatically think the way that you think that the parsha pshat. Whatever I spend for Shabbos, I'm going to get back. Because according to the market, you only spend for Shabbos what you spend for covered Shabbos, because you're worried about the covered Shabbos, not what you spend because you want. You want this tasty foods because you like it? No, what's covered Shabbos? If you do have a covered Shabbos, that's why they say it's called Shorter Sudas. Well, why is Shorter Sudas called Shorter Sudas? Is it three Sudas? It's one Suda. Why do you call it Shorter Sudas? So the answer to that question is, because, and this, you can especially understand this in the winter. You come back from home from shul and you eat the suda at 12:30. You get finished at 2:00. When it comes to suda's time, which is at 4:00, you're not hungry. So, if you eat shal sudas anyway, even though you're not hungry, because of the covet of Shabbos, that's megala that the other two sudas also. You didn't do it, even though you were hungry, and you ate it, but you didn't do it only because you were hungry. You would have done it even if you weren't hungry, because you see from Shavuot. So that all the three suras are meaningful from this Shavuot suras. So this is, it's very important to have a Rav who is, very important to have a Rav who could be madrich you on the Derech HaYashar, which is much more important than the shaila, which is also important. You've got to know what to do, but it doesn't change your life whether this basa b'chol shaila is going to be mutter or it's going to be asa. But these kind of questions can change the life and the life of future generations. That's why it's so important. Yes.
The question is, this year, I believe Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos, correct? So, does it have a... I mean, it pushes away the Shabbos, but, I mean, are there elements of Shabbos in this year's Yom Kippur because it happens to fall on that day? Does it change the tefillah of Yom Kippur in any way?
Sure it does. You don't say Vin Malkeinu, except by Neil.
Mm-hmm. But besides for the practical differences, like your Kavanah, should you... I mean...
Well, it says Shabbos in it. And? He says Shabbos in every tefillah. Shabbos is the holiest day of the whole year. It's even more than Yom Kippur. Because someone does melach on Shabbos, he's chayv skil. Someone does melach on Yom Kippur, he's chayv paras. So it has a, so you can tell from the Einish, the Chaznish says that the person rarely gave an Einish and didn't punish anyone. Because the Gemara says that if a Beis Din caused someone to die in 70 years, once in 70 years, it was called a bloody Beis Din. They did every trick in the book to make sure that he doesn't die. So there's witnesses that saw that this person took a sword and stabbed another person and he died on the spot. So there was no question. The two witnesses, they cross-examined the witness. When did it happen? Where did it happen? How did it happen? They said they both did the same. So they asked some questions which you don't have to ask. Was the dates on the tree? What kind of fruit was on the tree? Was it, as I said, Bunsen was a date tree that was next to where this happened. He said, were there big dates or were there little dates? How big were the dates? Until they one said that they were big, no one said it was little, and they said, well, you're not kosher witnesses, goodbye, next case. So they tried whatever they could to say. So the Chaznish says, so why did the Torah give these anshim, to say the Torah is anshim, if they tried whatever they could not to give it? So Chaznish says that the main reason why Torah wrote is to understand the severity of the Aveira. So how do we know that Shabbos is more severe than Yom Kippur? Because here it says it's Chayv Skila, and here it says it's Chayv Kars. That's the purpose of it. Now, of course, if someone kills someone else, he was a public menace. This guy's a murderer. So you think they're going to get away with it? No, they didn't let him get away with it. Someone was Epicurus. You think they're going to get away with it? The Al-Khazal was smarter than to... We get him off the hook. As far as giving him skill goes, that means you'd have to throw him off a cliff. He'll die that way. They had a special type of treatment that they put him in a cell and they didn't give him anything to eat for 3 days. Then they gave him barley to eat. So he's hungry. So they cooked the barley. I mean, I guess they cooked it. And maybe they didn't cook it, but they steamed it, whatever. They gave him barley to eat. And then they gave him water. As much as you want. So when you take water, the barley expands. It expands in the stomach. And he died. Because it expands so much, and it killed him. He killed himself. He shouldn't have drank so much water. So therefore, they were not considered responsible. Yeah. And that's the way they did it. Because there are ways how to get things done. Because I knew how to do it. Because you can't let a public menace around on the street and put everyone in danger. So even though they couldn't kill him, even though they really had witnesses that he killed someone, but when they knew for sure, that he did it, so they would do that.
Different question, totally unrelated. Are there any halachic implications of let's say climate change or caring for the environment? Are there any sort of halachic implications?
Well, you know, if it doesn't rain, so then you can miss a sukkah without any problem. Okay. Now, it's an interesting thing. We have a meteorologist over here in the shul. His name is Bill Lerner. And that's his parnasa. So I asked him which month is the month that has the least amount of rain. I thought in the summer it would be the least amount of rain. He said no. The amount of rain that falls the whole year is the same every month. Basically, it's the same. It's different in the summer than in the winter. In the winter, you can have a dreary, cloudy day for 2 days or 3 days straight. And in the summer, it comes down in showers very often at night. But the amount of rainfall is the same every month, except one month is less than all the other months, and that's October. And that's when Sukkot falls. So it's clearly, that rain clears Min HaShemayim.
Have I had an interesting conversation?
Climate change.
Okay. Anything else?
Okay. There are a lot of implications about climate change, or the whole stuff about climate change. And that is, you didn't get blamed for everything, you know that. So if the climate change doesn't happen, we get blamed. If it does happen, and it's not supposed to happen, we get blamed. So we're the scapegoat, you know that. It's old tradition. So it, in that way it affects us, but otherwise it has no bearing. This whole climate change is ridiculous. Because even if it's true that the world's getting hotter, the amount of... Do you know how much heat the sun puts out? The sun is between 91 and 93 miles away, a million miles away from us, and has enough heat to heat up the earth. Right? So it must be a strong heater. And it's been going on for 5,777 years without let up. Okay, so you can imagine the amount of heat that's coming out of the sun. So if there's an explosion on the sun, there are spots on the sun, and some of these explosions, the astronomers can see it, and there's like flare-ups that come out of the sphere of the sun. It makes much more difference to the earth than if someone puts his heater on in the winter. Because everything, with all the heat that goes on in the winter and all the air conditioning that goes in the summer that you need heat to make these generators move, whatever it is, it's a tipish of Yom. It's like a drop in the sea. It doesn't mean anything. It's like this whole cholesterol business. Scandal, I'll call it. Are there any doctors over here? Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how much cholesterol you eat. It has no effect on a person has high cholesterol, low cholesterol. It's not going to make his cholesterol more. It's not going to make it less. It's minimal. The cholesterol is produced in the liver, and that's some people's liver produce too much cholesterol, so they got problems with the hardening of the arteries and other things like that. Some people produce too little, and they get stiff limbs, and they can't move. They wear out the joints and other things. So that's what it is. So this whole talk about don't eat too much liver, or don't eat a tongue, because it's gonna affect the cholesterol. It's all bubblemices. Every doctor who knows that is just that we live in a society where they can get money to study cholesterol, they can get money for this and that, they get money for the climate change, if it does change, it doesn't change, so it's all business.
Are you short? So we're having a conversation coming up technology on Shabbos. and how technology has kind of exploded, and at some point in the future beyond us, you'll be able to control things with your thought process.
It's available already.
So
they have these arms, legs, that's already
available. So is that a problem for Shabbos?
Okay, so let me tell you something. Everything that has happened and that's going to happen already has a halacha about it. Why? Because are you allowed to eat an apple? What does the Torah say about eating an apple? The Torah doesn't say anything about it. The Torah doesn't talk about apples. So the if the Torah doesn't say that you're not allowed to eat it, you're allowed to eat it. If the Torah doesn't say you cannot use electricity, you're allowed to use electricity. Now, some cases, the Torah says you can't use it. Let's say if you want to start a grinder, so it says you can't grind. But if the Torah doesn't, if you walk across the carpet, you're producing electricity, you know that. If you hold a fluorescent bulb in your hand, one of these long ones, in the middle of the bulb, and you walk on a carpet, it will light up. So it lights up, why? Because of electricity that you're creating. So no one has it walking on a carpet. That doesn't say any place you're not allowed to walk on a carpet. So everything has a halacha already. I don't know what they're going to invent or discover in 5 years from now, even in 1 year from now, I don't know. But it has a halacha already. So you have to figure out the halacha, and you know, you need people who are familiar with all these inyanim, and they're going to figure it out. So the latest question, I mean, it's not so late, but I mean, it's already nagei ready for about 15-20 years, is about refrigerators. That by opening up the refrigerators, it used to be, the refrigerators had heaters in them. Now, you know that the old refrigerators, sometimes you on the side it felt hot because the electricity was because the insulation was worn out, and so you could feel the heat. They have heat, and why do you need heat in the refrigerator? The refrigerator is supposed to keep things cold.
Frost-free.
Right, because in order, even if it's not frost-free, but the coils, especially in the frost-free, that you needed it in order to melt the ice which forms on the coils, because it insulates the space in the refrigerator from the coils. The cold doesn't go through, and so therefore you've got to melt it off. Okay, so it used to be that there was a certain, like every hour, it went on for 5 minutes, and whether you opened the refrigerator, you didn't open the refrigerator, it was the same. So you didn't do anything by opening and closing it. But now, you see, and this is a thing, things that happen and how it affects us. So there's a law, I believe, that you have to say how much electricity is going to use up in a year. So it says $169, and then one says $168. $168, that's much better. It's got electricity, I'm going to save myself $1, so I'll pay $400 more for the refrigerator. So that's exactly what happens. Okay. So now they were interested in using as little electricity as possible. So they changed this function of the refrigerator to... it doesn't automatically go to at specific times, because sometimes you don't need it as much. If you don't open the refrigerator the whole night, so there's going to be less water vapor in the air, and so then there's less ice. If you open it up 5 times in an hour during the day, so there's much more. So it goes now by either how many times you open it, or by the compressor time, which is also related to how many times you open it. So when you open the refrigerator, you're actually causing the heat to go on. So you cause the refrigeration to go on. It's not necessarily the Torah, it's not necessarily Rabbanan. When you cause the coil to go on, it causes a derisa, because you're causing a fire to go on. Okay, so that's a new shayla. So this law that you have to write how much electricity you use has affected us. whether you could use when you say the climate change could also affect us. I don't know yet how it's going to affect us. It could affect us, but there's been climate changes all through the 5,777 years. Sometimes you get a cold spell for 25 years, sometimes you get a heat spell, which is basically totally in the sun. That's mostly where it comes from. But it could affect us somehow, I don't know yet.
So what about the mind, the limbs that are controlled by thought waves and sensors of thought waves?
You asked me a question that says Mefurish in the Zmiris.
Well, here
it says in the Torah, in the Zmiris, Chafotzecha Asurim, Vagam Lachshav Chishbainois, of business, you're allowed to be thinking. Harharim Utarim, you're allowed to think. So it says Mefurish, you're allowed to think. What kind of question are you asking?
What could be is talking about when it's not connected to a robotic limb.
But what if the thought process could flip on a light or something like that? I mean, does that change that? Or
you know, the Torah says lo sasa kamloch. Pashas asi is only with something that you do, not something which you think. Do you know how many malachim you create when you learn Torah? So you're making malachim. And it doesn't seem to be a problem.
That's all switches by the mic. Anyone else have a question?
Okay, so I just want to say that you're doing a tremendous mitzvah, spending time learning. It is, whether you're learning full-time or part-time, whenever you can, it's a tremendous mitzvah. Talmud Torah Kenegad Kulam. There is Hashkom Sveis Hamidrash, Shachas Aris, Achnosis Orchim, Mikachelim, Nosis Kala. They're all big mitzvahs, but Talmud Torah Kenegad Kulam. There's nothing bigger than Talmud Torah. So you have a tremendous chusim that you're learning Torah, each person according to the way that he can. And it should be a chus for yourselves and for your wives if you're married, and your children and your future daughters. To have people that spend the time learning Torah.
Can I just ask one question on that? Sorry. Now with Torah available that you could listen to all day, is it the same thing as learning Torah?
I will tell you something. Yosef said to the brothers, Al Tirgazu Badarach, when you're going on the road, don't when you're doing things, you're working, you don't want to have your earphones on and the headphones and the learning. How are you going to concentrate on your work? You're getting paid for working if you're an employee, so then you've got to give your all to your employer. Not only that, but even if your parents come normally, and you're supposed to get up the Malayimov, as soon as you see them over there, you just go like this, in order not to be mavatal the work of the Balabites. You know, it's called stealing. That's why I started out with Loy Signaiv. So they spelled with an Aleph, right? So so even though there's a mitzvah to get up for the parents, and you say, Loy, through the mitzvah of the Rabbanu Shalom, so I know how to steal. No, that's Ramus Akkos. I had to see this was enough. So, when you're doing your work, you have to concentrate on your work. And you can't really concentrate on Torah properly if you're doing two things. So, someone called me up. He had a Shiloh. I was going somewhere in the car, so I have a Bluetooth in the car so I can talk on the phone and drive. And I was involved in the Shiloh that he was discussing with me. I missed two exits. It took me a half hour to get back. I said, it's my fault. I wasn't a kind what it says, Al Tugruzu Adar.
The Maaseh with the rudiment.
So then it's not...
Okay. What's the Maaseh with the rudiment?
The rudiment told Rabbi he almost killed himself.
Yeah, how do you know the story?
The Shira, I used to come to every Shira Maaseh Shabbos when I was...
Yeah, there was Rav Rudiment was the Rosh Hashiva in Israel. He was a tremendous gun. I'll just tell you a story with him. what he knew was unbelievable. I was a Rebbe in the Mechina of Bnei Yisrael in the high school, and I came across I had a shayla on the Gemara. I had a big kasha on the Gemara. So I looked in the back pages and I saw that there's a tshuva from the Emunas Shmuel who speaks about this question. Okay, but he doesn't say what he said. So I didn't have a Sefer Emunas Shmuel. I never heard of a Sefer Emunas Shmuel. The yeshiva library in Israel, they have a lot of Svarim, they didn't have the Sefer Emunas Shmuel. So I went to the yeshiva Rudman's house, and because he had 27,000 Svarim, so he had every Sefer that you could think of. So I don't know if he had this Sefer, because it's not such a well-known Sefer, at least I thought. So I said, I asked him if he has this, if the yeshiva has the Sefer Emunas Shmuel. So he looks at me as if I think he's a guy. What do you mean, I have it? Of course I have the Sefer. Okay. So I said, so he said, well, why do you need the Sefer? So I told him I had this discussion of what. And the Emunas Shmuel speaks about it. He says, the Emunas Shmuel says two answers on this question. This is the first answer, and he brings a rye from this and this place. And this is the second answer, and he brings a rye from a different place. So I said, you know, if the Rishiva doesn't mind, if it could bother Sefer, I'd like to see it inside. He said, he moved to Yeshiva, to the new campus over there, and he had a new house, and he said, now that the Bochrim, some volunteered to make an order in his Sfarim, and he said, now that they made an order in my Sfarim, I can't find a single Sefer anymore. He couldn't see well. So he says, but you know, I have a feeling for the Sefer. Maybe I'll be able to feel it. So, like, you see these kind of bookcases over here? So he had in his office, it was about as long as this room, and like one bookcase after another, it was all surrounded, the whole thing was full of bookcases. He goes to the first one, he feels the first shelf, he says, name's Nidor, second, third, fourth, all down, he says, not here. Second one, he says, not here. Third one, not here. Fourth one, he said, Look at this, see if this is the one. He couldn't see. So I took the Sefer, it was it. He could feel it. I looked up this tshuva, it was exactly the way he said it, the first terrace first, the second terrace second, the rye that he brought. I was much since Paul. So they say that from the time he walked from his house to the yeshiva, he made his shir. He was a tremendous tamakor. Anyway, so he was walking out of his house, and I was driving down, there was a road right in front of his house. He stops me, and he says, you know, you nearly killed me. I said, I'm sorry, I didn't realize. I mean, I didn't realize that I killed him. And I didn't, what did I do? So he said, that someone was driving the road like you are, and he nearly bumped into me, and the last second he screeched on the brake and he stopped. Mom's right in front of me. And I said to him, what's going on? He said, please forgive me, but I was listening to a shiur from Rabbi Heinemann on the tape. So that's my fault. That's the last you heard, huh? Okay, everybody, sign. Be well.
Thank you very much.
I don't know if there are members. We spent a day on a boat in Norfolk, Virginia, on a very cold January, looking at the shoreline for the Eruv to see. Jeffrey Brooks, the president of the shore. It was very enjoyable, except that I don't think I was ever so cold in my life. I still always wonder what I was looking at in terms of. We didn't do it, though. We have an Eruv, as you probably know, but what was the shoreline? What was the.
That the pier should come up.
Right, we had some of that. But not enough. That would have been the easy, cheap way to make an Eruv. Because Norfolk has got the river that goes on. So thank God we have it now.
So that was probably 19.